Partners, council, we ready to go? Just about?
Yes. Almost.
Almost. Go ahead and be seated. All right.
Ready?
Yeah. You want to reserve any time, Mr. Erga?
Thank you, Chief Justice, members of the court. Good morning. Pleasant to see everybody, frankly. It's been a long time, we're here on a situation where we think that the district court made a mistake when it granted the partial motion for summary judgment. And there's a couple of issues that have arisen, but the court, we think, erred in saying that we, as a secured creditor, could not have an interest in the proceeds from the sale of a government-approved license, and that's the marijuana license that we're talking about. And then there's a couple of other issues, but I think the case really is an interplay between the marijuana statutes and the Uniform Commercial Code that has been on our books since, 1999, effective as of July 1st, 2001. So it's been on the books and for a long period of time, and I think there's going to be some interplay between those two that somehow I think the lower court did not either understand or did not want to deal with. What the district court found was that without prior approval from either the Department of Taxation, which was the original entity that was governing this, or the more recent Cannabis Board, Compliance Board, that in order to get a grant of security interest in a license, you had to go before them to get approval before you could get it. So obviously there was some indication that those licenses have value. They just try to put some restriction on how you go about doing it. And if you look at the two orders the judge entered, and first of all, entered an order for granting the motion for partial summary judgment, and then he made a motion for clarification, seeking to say, well, okay, we at least have a security interest in the proceeds. And the district court said, no, you don't, under the same rationale that that she followed in the first case. What the interesting thing, I think, is that she never mentioned or nobody dealt with 104, the UCC, and specifically 104.9408, which is the one that I think is controlling here. And since the court didn't even really look at it, because the court said that you don't have a chance to get a security agreement unless you go before some board, either the taxation board or the cannabis board, before you get the security interest to get approval for it. And she relied on regulations that were imposed under those scenarios. The legislature doesn't say that. Legislation doesn't say that. What happens is that the judge and the receiver now are saying, well, there's prohibitions on transferring a license, and so therefore you can't grant security interest. Well, that's not the case at all in our situation or in any of these situations. Well, for that standpoint, we think that the law is clear under NRS 104.9408 that if there's any, this has been on the books now since, like I said, 1999, effective 2001.
Mr. Erga, I have a question. How do you reconcile the judge's findings on the conclusions of law number 23 when she cites to the NAC 453 I'm sorry, maybe it's 24, NAC 453D, just...
You're looking at finding...
Yeah, 23 and 24. She puts NAC 453D, 315, as adopted by the department pursuant to 453D 200. Security interest could not be granted, quote, in any marijuana establishment or any portion thereof. That's how do you reconcile that with...
That's a regulation.
Right.
And if you look at 104-9408 and the provisions in that statute, it is really clear that you cannot do what she did, relying on that, because the statute has said from the beginning that if there is another statute out there that tries to restrict or prevent you getting that security interest, it is ineffective, is the word they use. So that's what the UCC across the country has been using. And this section that I'm talking about was somewhat new in some cases, and it came about now. And if you look, there's almost every state has the same thing. They have the same law. So what it says is to protect the government, you can get the security interest, but we can't foreclose on it. So that's the protection. And so when they put that regulation in there, it says that there can be no statute, no regulation or law that prevents the granting of the security interest in the license. But the UCC then goes down to say, but because it's one that has to have governmental approval, we can't foreclose. So it is not the greatest thing in the world, but frankly, it's probably in a lot of these cases, including the marijuana cases, it's probably the most valuable asset. And clearly the state has recognized you can sell that asset because they've done that now. And this is the case we're in front of us right now. They sold it for, and they received over $12 million for assets. So there is a value there. We couldn't foreclose. It's very clear that we couldn't foreclose. But we think, and we've cited case law from various jurisdictions that say you can have a security interest in those proceeds. And that's what the judge said we don't get, because she said that we don't even have a security interest in anything because we didn't go through the process going before the Board of Taxation or the Cannabis Board.
Essentially saying that unless you're approved by the board to be able to operate as a licensee, you can't be a creditor with a secured interest.
That's what she kind of said, and that flies in the face of 9408. And more importantly, when my clients were getting these security interest in 2016, 2017, and in January of 2018, there was nothing that prohibited that. So,
Mr. Berger, the district judge said in her order on your motion for reconsideration or clarification, she said, you didn't say anything about proceeds in your briefing on the motion. So did you?
I do what?
That you didn't argue about security interest in the proceeds when originally briefing the motion for partial summary judgment.
That's right. We didn't. We only said that because there was a ruling, or they were saying that we don't have any interest in anything.
Okay.
And so what we were concerned about is to say, well, we do have an interest in the license. That's what our security agreement said. So we thought that that would be a sufficient, because we did cite 9408. Judge didn't seem to want to talk about it, and so she didn't. And so then when we looked at it and said, well, wait a minute, we have to go for either a rehearing or for clarification. She said, I'm not going to rehear it, but I am going to clarify it. When I meant, and I relied on you having to go before either the Board of Taxation or the Cannabis Board, that applied both to the license and the proceeds.
And so we have the legislature obviously having approved 104.9408 with the provision, as you've described it, saying, no law, statute, or regulation can prevent this, basically. And then the Nevada legislature sometime later then passes different statutes. There's regulations adopted that say you can't have a security interest. So now we have kind of conflicting laws. How do we resolve that conflict?
Well, I think the law is that 9408 is controlling. And then if you look at it, the courts have said that this is of general applicability. And it's very, very broad, covers all kinds of properties. And so what it says is that to protect the businesses for when you get that license, that we can't maybe go foreclose on it, but at the same time, you can't have the legislature or, more importantly, some regulatory rule that says you can't even grant a security interest, Mr. Licensee. And we that's what we argue against, because it affects either you're forming it or you're perfecting it, but we can't foreclose on it. But the regulation said they couldn't even grant. Supposedly they couldn't even grant one. That is absolutely prohibited by 9408. And so what the judge did was by relying on that, by relying on those regulations and just ignoring, I think, what 9048 says, that it was improper. So, it was an error.
Could I sharpen the pencil a little bit on your argument? 5.1104 contains two prohibitions. One says you can't grant. The other says you can't foreclose. Those are two distinct operative terms. So I get your point that at the time the security interest was granted, this regulation was not in place. Are you contesting the provision of the regulation that would preclude you from foreclosing without complying with Rule 56?
No, we are not. We never have said that we can foreclose, because 9408 says we cannot.
Right.
And we never asked the court or indicated that we would be foreclosing. It's kind of like a situation where if you're the lender and you know there's a valuable asset there, you're hoping that at some point, if there's a true sale, you're going to get some money, but we can't foreclose.
Could you touch on another point? I think that's important here. I'm not sure under Walker that the court would ordinarily entertain this writ petition because of the underlying proceedings below. However, we do when there are issues involving judicial economy. And perhaps, Mr. Erger, you could comment about the status of the proceedings. I'm concerned that if you were to later prevail, the proceeds would already be distributed. Are there bonds in place? Are there stays in place? What's the situation for us to assess the judicial economy aspect of your writ petition?
Well, right now there's been a sale. The trustee has, you know, over $9 million sitting there, but there's a whole process that it still has to go forward. Now, you've got two writs that they've already filed trying to get some of the administrative expenses that you're going to be dealing with, but then you've got the certificates, the receiver certificates, and if we're successful, secured creditors claims, that all have to go back down to the district court so that the district court can determine if this is a valid and perfected security interest. Have we done the steps that we did? Likewise, how do you treat the receiver certificates?
So what I'm getting at is, at the moment, if we denied the writ at this point, then your perfected interest is essentially gone under the current ruling, and the distribution the court would be making below is going to be consistent with that ruling. Your objectives in a later appeal lost because the money is already taken off? That's what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, the money will be gone. That's the problem. That's why we're here.
The object of your appeal would be lost.
Clearly.
Absolutely. So we should entertain the writ petition.
That is exactly correct, because if you don't, and the receiver then goes and files all of the proceedings that he wants to do to deal with all of the other creditors' claims, and those monies are then paid out, then we're out no matter what our claim is, because all of a sudden the lower court has ruled that we don't have a security interest in either the license or, more importantly, in the proceeds. So that would be very, very unfair to us. In fact, what we've said is that it would just basically wipe out our secured claim at all. I mean, it wouldn't be there. We'd have it and put it on a wall, but there wouldn't be anything to collect. That's the problem that you have. From that standpoint, the issue, like I said, is one that, for what I don't know ever reason, the judge didn't want to look at 9408 in this case, which to me is the controlling statute that is in place here. And the other statutes really don't do that. It's the regulations where they're trying to come and say you can't even grant a security interest in a license. And when you look at what the cases have said, you know, most of the cases that are in our favor say that it's kind of like a two-step process. As it relates to the licensee and its governmental regulations, you don't have a vested right. It's a privilege. But there is a valid interest in that license because the licensee has at least two things on in the licensee's favor. One, and more importantly, it can have a sale. And second, and just as important, it's the proceeds. So those are the assets that the court finds are property of the estate, and that's what our cases have said. They cover that. And so in the simple thing that I'm thinking about is somebody wants to buy something, a license, wants $1 million to have to do that. Person has the money, does that, then next year sells it for $2 million. The sale took place, the government approved it, he gets $2 million. If they didn't have that $1 million and he borrows that $1 million, the secured creditor gets the interest in the proceeds. So the sale takes place, $2 million, and then the secured creditor gets repaid on the loan, and the seller gets to keep the balance. That's that. Basically, that simple is what we're looking at from a standpoint, from making it maybe too complex to if we just look at what the statutes have said and look at what the judge should have, I think, relied for under 9408, it makes it a lot simpler.
Counsel,
it means that you can grant the, I'm sorry.
Is there another context you can analogize this? These are not the only licenses granted. So liquor license, gaming license, like how is a security interest been handled in different areas that would help inform this court?
Well, unfortunately, there's not a lot of law in Nevada on that, but we have cited cases from other jurisdictions, and the majority of the rule is that even if it's considered a privilege, there is still an interest in that license as long as it can be sold. You have an interest, so that becomes property under the definition of general intangibles. And that's a very broad definition, and the courts have looked at it from a standpoint. It tried to cover everything. So there's cases all over the place that have said, okay, you have that security interest in the proceeds. Now, they've cited New Jersey and California cases, which I think clearly are the minority, is the minority position, that says, no, it's a privilege. You can't get a security interest in the license, and you can't get a security interest in the proceeds. Now, if that's the case, then you're following what California and New Jersey have done versus cases we've cited from several different jurisdictions that look at it more from a standpoint of, let's look at what 9408 is intended to do. It's to help business to be able to go forward, and because in many cases the major asset is the license, just like here in today at the marijuana licenses. It's not the location, it's the license that sells for all of the money. So what you do is to be able to do is to say, district court, you were wrong in that regard, and we should grant the our petition so that you send it back to the district court to change its ruling and said that, well, it was ineffective what the cannabis board did when they adopted their regulation and the earlier regulation by the taxation board. You cannot prevent the granting of that security interest. All you can do is make sure that it doesn't affect the foreclosure process. And that's the difference. And that makes it, to me, kind of a simple process, even though we've got a lot of filings here. But that makes it, to me, the common sense is that it's not a question of transfer. That's what the receiver kept arguing. Well, you can't transfer it, so therefore you can't have a security interest in it. Well, security interest is not a transfer of the license. All it does is give somebody, a lender, the right to maybe recover money if, in fact, there's a sale. If there's no sale, the secured creditor gets no benefit from it at all. But if there's a sale, there maybe is a benefit.
Thank you.
Pardon?
You're out of time.
I'm not out of time.
Thanks.
As I'm dropping things. Good morning, and I will echo Mr. Erga's comments that it is nice to be here in front of the justices as opposed to on a video camera, which we've been doing. I want to address two things briefly before I jump into my outline addressing two of the questions the justices asked. One, We cited, and I think the CCB cited, Corey B. Robison as an analogous situation with respect to gaming. And we believe, and in that decision, this court said the acquisition of a gaming license and use permit constitutes a privilege and not a property right. And any license is a revocable privilege, and no holder acquires any vested right therein or thereunder. And if I think the court, not necessarily confirmed that, but echoed that ruling about a week ago when the court made a decision to give deference to the gaming board with respect to another analogous situation where we were interpreting specific statutes over general statutes, which is essentially what Mr. Erga and his clients are asking the court to do here. We believe very strongly that the court should give deference to the CCB and to the regulations, much like the court did in the Corey decision, and make a determination that there isn't a property right. And then to another question that was asked.
Well, I'm not sure that that's really analogous, because the step, in, at least the regulations that have been enacted for the Cannabis Control Board, permit granting security interests and foreclosing interests as long as you comply with the statute.
Well, correct. I would agree with that. That is one interpretation.
You're saying in the one, it's privileged license. Nobody can have an interest in it of any kind. This seems to suggest a slightly different approach.
There could be a security interest that Mr. Erga has acknowledged that cannot be foreclosed upon. I would question what else a creditor would do other than what Highland has done in this case to foreclose on a security interest. They filed a complaint and intervention. They asked for the appointment of a receiver. They drove the process to sell the asset, and now we're asking for a position in funds, which, in my experience, representing creditors is exactly what you do to foreclose a security interest. I think that's exactly what they're asking this court to allow them to do, which is...
Except they're not asking to own the license at the end of the process.
Well, correct. That's the difference. That is the difference.
Right.
But that, candidly, Justice, is the only difference. That is really, they want a...
But if they're not going to own the license, why do they have to qualify to have the license?
Well, because at the time, the concern that I guess we would have from a policy standpoint...
They qualify
would be,
to own dollars.
That's fair. But then they have to take steps to actually own dollars as well. I don't think that the record in this case shows that they did that. One of the concerns that we have is they filed a motion. They don't cite the statute at all in the opposition to our motion. They never talk about the UCC. They never actually cite this statute that Mr. Erga is hanging his hat on today in their opposition to the underlying motion. It comes up for the very first time in the motion to reconsider, which is at what point Judge Gonzalez comes back and says, well, okay, that's an interesting argument, but you didn't do anything to go and go to the CCB, go to the Department of Taxation, go to anybody to do anything about that. So this is a nice academic argument, but you didn't do it. So then, against that backdrop, and again, I understand, latches is always one of those arguments you throw in your affirmative defenses and maybe don't necessarily argue before the Nevada Supreme Court. But this feels to me like black letter law latches. They let the sale happen without objection. People proceed pursuant to the court orders that Judge Gonzalez entered in reliance upon those orders. Money is obtained for the licenses. And they don't do anything with respect to the cash. And they had their 21-day window. They don't do anything for that period all the way for 11 months until they file the instant writ. Well, at that point, the license has been sold. The money has been distributed. Purchasers have obtained the licenses, not the least of which being the principal of Highland, who formed another entity to buy several of the licenses, but that's a different issue. But there were other third parties as well, one in Pahrump and another one that brought these in reliance on the court order. And what Mr. Erga and his client are asking this court to do is completely unring all of the bells that rang for that 11-month period when the parties proceeded in reliance upon Judge Gonzalez's orders.
Well, what would have been different? How did you or others rely to their detriment because they waited until the sale was complete before taking it up to us.
Well, presumably, based upon what happened with in Judge Gonzalez's courtroom, they would have asked for a stay immediately upon submission to the writ to the Supreme Court, and everything would have been stayed at that point. The sales would have been stayed,
right.
The proceedings would have been stayed, and then we would have had some guidance from this court as to whether they had a security interest in the license and then a subsequent security interest in the cash before anything happened.
What's the detriment from the fact that they waited? That's the other piece of latches,
if
that's the argument. What was the detriment by going forward without having them take it up to us?
Well, arguably, now you would have license holders that would have encumbered licenses. I mean, if Mr. Erga's argument is played out to its logical end, they would either have encumbered licenses or cash that has been distributed, including to the IRS and to the state, would not have been distributed.
Would there have been some difference in the proceeds of the sale or how the sale were conducted?
Candidly, I don't know. I mean, I don't know, because Judge Gonzalez proceeded as if they did not have an interest in the license and proceeded as if they did not have an interest in the proceeds. And the bidding was open, including, not coincidentally, there was no credit bid allowed. So the sale process, I mean, it's a hypothetical. I don't know that the judge would have conducted the sale differently or that the process would have played out differently. And candidly, we probably will never know. But again, if folks are coming in to buy these licenses and there is a security interest attached to them for Mr. Erga's clients, which is what he's asking this court now to basically retroactively hold, to say that he had an interest at that time, it absolutely could have impacted the sale.
So if he doesn't bring this writ to us now, then receiver proceeds with, I guess, some sort of a pro rata distribution among creditors who are assumed to be, I guess, not secured creditors. And then they would be able to appeal at the end of the case and ask for a different decision, right?
Well, they would, but I would have probably the same argument at the end of the case that I'm making now, excuse me.
That it's improper to wait till the end of the case and appeal?
Well, it depends if it's final order. I mean, at that point, I guess my concern is to bring the writ that they brought and to ask for the relief that they brought, which is a different, I haven't gotten to it yet, but I think they're asking actually for an advisory opinion from this court, which is improper. But to bring the writ when they did, to wait 11 months instead of bringing it at the time, I think there was absolutely harm and detrimental reliance by the judge in conducting the sale, the parties that purchased the licenses, and then distribution of funds, some of which have now been stayed, but some of which proceeded as accordingly. So it's not that they should have waited till the end. I think that if they were going to bring this, they should have brought it right after they lost their motion to reconsider, which goes to the next point that I was going to address with one of the justices' questions. The only issue, and we brought this up on a separate writ to this court, that would impair Mr. Erga's clients going forward are administrative expenses that have not been paid. I would argue and submit, and maybe this would be an argument for another day, the administrative expenses are going to come before Mr. Erga's client, even if he is a secured creditor. So the issue as to whether his client is completely out of luck if the court doesn't grant this writ or doesn't give them the relief they're seeking, I don't think is accurate, because the only expenses that are right now in line to be paid by the receiver would be administrative expenses, assuming that the stay is lifted and Judge Denton then allows some level of administrative expense, leaving some money in there. And then all the creditors are going to have to figure out who gets what and make those arguments to Judge Denton. I don't think that Mr. Erga's clients would be completely frustrated and be completely out of luck if this writ was denied, because the only thing left is administrative expenses, and they're ahead of secured creditors anyway. So I don't think that question was ever actually answered, but I think to your honor's question, I don't believe the goal of Highland would be frustrated or completely eliminated by denial of this writ.
I'm confused by that
explanation.
You're saying that $12 million in proceeds will not be distributed to his client under any circumstances, because there are administrative expenses that exceed the $12 million?
No, what I was saying is the only expenses that are right now in plan to be distributed are administrative expenses. There are still, I don't know they're going to be $12 million dollars.
It is in front of us. It is Mr. Erga argues UCC 9408, not the NRS equivalent. I wonder if you could talk about the NRS equivalent of 9408 and whether that statute, as he argues, somehow trumps or intercedes or precludes the application of the regulations in 5.110 subsection 4.
I don't see how it can, and the reason for that would be this. The statute, and again, this goes back to...
Can we begin with comparing a plain meaning
right.
of the NRS equivalent of 9408 rather than UCC 9408?
Well, the plain meaning, again, and this argument came up late, but the plain meaning of 9408 is a general security interest in personal property,
right.
correct? And the way that we read the regulations and code provisions and other statutes is that when the cannabis legislation was enacted, it created very specific regulations and very specific guidelines. And I think that, as Your Honor pointed out, 5.1104 is very specific in terms of what is required. And we believe that the general ability to have a security interest in some personal property would only apply if there wasn't a more specific guideline provided to us by the legislature, which we think has been provided several times, actually, but specifically in the statute that Your Honor cited. And against that backdrop, there is a question right out of the gate as to whether a cannabis license is personal property or not. We don't believe it is. We believe that the legislature and candidly this court has deemed that it is a privilege and not a property right. Second, it's certainly not something Mr. Erga has conceded that can be foreclosed upon. It's not something that you can actually take and go and get bank financing or whatever you want to do. It's not something of that ilk that would constitute personal property. And it is regulated in such a way, kind of like a gaming license, that it would seem to mitigate against the classification, for lack of a better word, of it as personal property.
Mr. Boshi, if I could interrupt, sure. And I apologize, but I mean, from a public policy standpoint, you made reference several times to the way we read those statutes, but from a public policy standpoint, why would we treat it different than the general provisions of Article 9 of the UCC with regard to, say, liquor licenses, where third-party creditors can attach and get money from the sale of proceeds, knowing that they can't foreclose, but just from the sale of proceeds?
Certainly.
Why treat marijuana differently in that regard?
Well, I think the legislature has treated marijuana differently. I think cannabis has been treated differently than liquor licenses in terms of the guidelines provided to us in the NAC and also in the regulatory provisions. Cannabis is, I would submit, is a much more regulated industry than a liquor license. I think it is a lot harder to get a cannabis license than it is to get a liquor license. And the regulations are stricter for a reason, right? The idea behind having the regulation of cannabis that we have in this state is specifically tied to safety and police power. And that's one of the things that CCB referenced in their amicus brief, is that there is a real safety police concern here, that if we go down this road, if we go down the road of allowing basically a contracts 101 analysis of this as a property right and a secured transaction analysis of what you can do, that you could open a door that you can't close. At that point, you would be making a lot of the regulations that the state has imposed on this very specific and very regulated industry moot. At that point, if you can do whatever you want with a cannabis license, at that stage, then why do we have the regulations that we have? Why have the courts and the legislature imposed the regulations that they have to make sure that these things don't go off the rails and that these things are regulated to the point where we have a safety concern?
Didn't they say that the intent was to regulate it like liquor?
Wasn't that
made explicit?
I actually think we cited that in our motion as well, but I think that the liquor licensing was a guideline. I think the cannabis statutes and regulations were beyond that. I think that they were imposed and create a greater restriction, greater regulation than liquor. Even though liquor was a good guideline to use, cannabis was obviously more restrictive. And I think I'm out of time unless your honors have any other questions for me.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
And we appreciate the briefing and the arguments today. And colleagues, before we wrap it up, do you have any questions for either?
If I could just, I promise it's a quick one, I think.
Of course.
Mr. Erga, Mr. Boshi said that in your opposition to the motion for partial summary judgment before the district court, you did not even cite 104.9408. Is that true?
Well, I'm not looking at it. I'm going to say yes, because what we were looking at there was a license itself,
okay,
not the proceeds that is covered by 9408. And so that does make a difference.
Does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. The matter will stand submitted. We'll stand in recess for the next call.